Welcome to Contagious Podcast, Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. I'm so excited to share with you the conversation that we had over on Clubhouse today. This is part of a six-part series focused on NADA 2021 and the inability for us to gather personally. So what we wanted to do is create a platform and a space for us to connect as personally as possible. Some incredible panelists, people in our industry that are pushing forward with innovation. Hope that you're encouraged by the conversation today. Just as a note, if you're not familiar with Clubhouse, it's an open forum platform where panelists, speakers, and audience members are all involved in the conversation. So you'll hear potential of some people talking through each other or questions being asked by those audience members, and hope that you are encouraged by the messages and the innovation and the thoughts that are shared today. So without further ado, let's head over to the broadcast. So welcome to NADA Plus Clubhouse 2021. We are launching off of the place that we all wish we could be, which is NADA this year, and we're missing that personal connection. I'm missing it from the events that we get to go to. We love to sit across the table, break bread together, and dream and ideate. Vendor rooms and big floors are cool, but lunches, dinners, and late nights with industry partners are even better. So we have this incredible thing called Clubhouse that came in just in time so that we could have more of those conversations across the table from each other. And it's been so encouraging. This is number 5 of a 6-part series that we've done over the last 2 days. And then we've got one more this afternoon. Had some incredible speakers and panelists, and then also incredible people that I've gotten to meet throughout this week that I would have never met would it not been for Clubhouse. And then we've connected offline and started having these continue these conversations that are happening in automotive. I've got some incredible panelists here today. I want to introduce them. We're going to ask them each kind of 2 questions, and I'm springing them on them, so you get to see how they think on the fly. And one of them is totally not automotive centric, and the other one is. And then I will introduce each one of them, and then we'll continue the conversation with everyone in the room. If you do raise your hand, I'll hold that until we get through the moderators to start the room, and then we'll get everyone going. So the very first question is, and I asked this yesterday as well, and I don't know if anyone in the room, I know Drew is going to answer this question in such a sad way to me, but where do you get your coffee? So what coffee shop? And if it's Starbucks, I'll kick you down to the audience. I'm just kidding. And if it's and what, how do you drink it? And then the next question is when did you fail at change management? What was a failure that you had at change management that you've grown from since? Not when did you crush it, but when did you go into something that you were changing in your store, in your company, that didn't work out, and where how have you grown since you failed in that moment? So the first moderator that we have today is Frank Lopes. Frank is the author of the 7-Minute Setup and host of Live with Lopes. I've really gotten to know him through Clubhouse and really been encouraged by a lot of the stuff that he's putting out. And his energy, especially. We named this Wake Up Sleepyheads, and I'm really glad he's number one on here because I know that Frank is going to bring the energy. Frank, take it away.
All right, so answer the 2 questions. That's what you want, Kyle, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so first question, where do you get your coffee? So I get, because I'm on the road a lot, I get my coffee from a lot of different places, but I am a coffee snob. I like admitted, and I could definitely use some therapy. My coffee right now, I'm drinking a cup that I got from Dunkin' on my way home from the barbershop. I had some leftovers, so I brought it with me. But generally, I like to make my coffee at home. When I am home, I take it light with cream, no sugar. And I think the main thing when it comes to change management, where I failed on change, is basically the fact that I'd have to say about 10 years ago, when I knew that I had to change a lot of the processes and stuff in my own life, and I was not using my own process. I was not using the process that I knew was going to help me to grow and help me to get out of the mess that I was in when I failed myself by not using my own process and not going to my own process. That is when, and that's my biggest failure of change. And I hope that's something that we can get through to somebody today. Is a big thing with change, man, is examine the process, adjust the process if necessary, and stick to the process afterwards.
Awesome. Thanks, Frank. I'm going to move to Nathaniel, and Nathaniel is the chief digital branding leader, and I love he got to create his title for himself in his store with the Mohawk Group, and is in on a mission to have the highest organic and engaged dealer social media platforms, and I think he's doing it so well. He's a content creator, a marketer at heart, and also is crushing it with 75 Hard, and my cap goes off to you as well.
Hey, yeah, so you're going to hate me. I don't drink coffee, don't need coffee. If I drink coffee, I'm pretty sure everybody in my office would hate me because I'd just be off the walls just a little more than I already am. they're all laughing behind me because I'm sitting in my office and they're like, yeah, you don't need coffee. But I do make coffee. I have an espresso machine at my house that I make for others when they come over. Nice double boiler, grinder, all the works. And I also have another coffee maker called the Grind Control, which is just for normal day. But change management, well, definitely always failing at this. You know, you said it, I made this job position and now I have three teammates with me, and we're always making changes, and those changes fail, and I have to learn from those every day.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's good to go into something saying there's a chance that this will fail, but I'm going to take the leap anyway. And so if you're willing to do that every single day, man, what a strong opportunity for you.
Thank
you. Drew, I met through a thing called Coffee Talks, and I saw it on LinkedIn, and Drew and Paul Daly we're having these coffee talks with marketers across our space, and I've met some incredible people all across the country and even in my city since then. So he is a bringer together, which I know that phrase probably isn't grammatically correct, but he's a bringer together of great minds and an encourager. He is the head of marketing at Goobagoo. And real quick, Drew, I'm going to, because I know that coffee isn't your thing, I'm going to ask you to tell everybody about Contra Dance, because that's your thing. Give that, as I know it's not in your bio, but give them a little bit about what you do in that, and then answer the.
All right. There's a pivot. Sure. Yeah. I'm one of the things I do when I'm not looking after marketing at Goobagoo is I'm a Contra Dance caller. So for those that aren't familiar with Contra Dance, it's a form of social dance similar to square dance, but a little bit more elegant, more swinging, and it's always led by fiddle music, so East Coast Canadian, Quebecois, and American bluegrass music, the kind of music that just makes you grin ear to ear. So it's been very interesting because obviously social dance is not something we can do right now. I've been calling a lot of virtual dances, just called one for Charleston last weekend and have Philadelphia coming up next week. So that's one of my pastimes.
One of the most interesting men in the world. There you go.
I do like to have some quirky hobbies, that's for sure. This question about failure, Kyle, I love that you're asking about failure, because I tell my team that, especially in marketing, fear of failure is a path to mediocrity, that we have to be completely comfortable with the chance that we might fail if we're going to push the edges hard enough to find those breakthrough campaigns or breakthrough ideas that are going to really bring about change, bring about success. So to me, it's so important for us to create a culture in our departments, in our organizations, where failure is not reprimanded, that failure is embraced. We learn from it. It's important, not that we don't repeat our failures, but we take those learnings and we move on, and we're daring and we're brave. That to me is so important, especially in marketing, but anywhere in business. So one of my biggest failures from the change management side, which was your core question, was before GoobaGoo, I was head of marketing for one of the largest dealer groups here in Canada, Performance Auto Group, 29 stores. And we decided to disrupt ourselves, and we launched the first Carvana of Canada. And it was a flop. we put a lot of effort into the technology. We had great branding. We went out to market with it. And the education curve at that time, now we're talking, I guess it's going on 5, 6, maybe even 7 years ago now that we launched. The market just wasn't ready, and the education curve was large. And so the whole process that we went through as an organization to introduce this change, buy-in really wasn't as authentic as we thought. And that's one thing that would be great to chat about when we're talking about change management. So that's probably my biggest and favorite failure, because boy, did I learn a lot from that.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that, Drew. That's really interesting. One thing I didn't know about you, and I'd love to chat about that more. Our next panelist and moderator today is Duran Cage, and I just met Duran just a few weeks ago. He is the CEO of Cage Automotive, does a lot of branding, consulting, everything from throughout the dealership, and is a, when I hear him talk and when I hear him on here on Clubhouse or on LinkedIn, I see that he has a massive passion for culture, and I think that's going to come out today as we talk about change management. I am excited to have you as a panelist, Duran.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, first off, thank you so much for letting me come in. And Drew, after this, I'd like to talk to you more about this dancing, because I need to do something different. So that sounds pretty cool. With coffee, for me, I'm actually not a big coffee person either. But I'm more of a green juice guy. So I drink greens in the morning. I try to like flip the system. But when I do drink coffee, I'll go to there's a local place called Crave where I live. And I don't know if that's like a big chain or not. And then sometimes I do a Starbucks, but I'm not really a big coffee guy. But when I do, typically it's just something just straight black coffee. So sorry about that. I couldn't bring the fire with the coffee. And then in terms of, man, failure when it comes to change management. So it's funny because, Kyle, you just talked about I'm passionate about culture, which is right. Culture, branding, organization. And the biggest wins that I've had have been from the losses that I've experienced. And so one that really came to mind as soon as you asked that question was it was back in when I was running a store, and it was probably about 2012, and we wanted to switch to one price. We're going to go one price. We went from a store that was just slanging and big negotiations to, hey, we're going to go one price. And what we didn't do is we didn't do exactly what I'm passionate about, is we never actually changed the culture. So we trained them. We got the workbooks together. We did everything. We got the pay plans going. Lee, can you hear me?
You're there, man.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. My AirPod just died. Let me put the other one in. Sorry about that. Okay. Can you guys hear me now? Perfect. So I was on fire and it just cooled down, but let's turn the heat back up. So, we did everything but make sure that we had the right culture in place. So the language wasn't even there to connect the dots with a one price store that just came from a store that was just, slashing prices left and right. And so going back to that, one of the biggest things that I would have changed in terms of culture is like every organization, and so our dealership has these internal leaders. So you have salespeople that are like some of your biggest advocates. Like they're the people that are talking when the leaders aren't talking. So when the managers aren't in the room, your leaders within your organization are really the ones that kind of control the temperature. And since we really didn't get their buy-in at the beginning, we really didn't dig into this pay plan, the comp structure. We really didn't dig into the marketing with them. They kind of felt like they just got left out. So the decision was made from the top. So it was me, the owner, and a couple people. This is what we're going to do. We rolled this joker on out. And next thing you know, within 90 days, I lost 70% of my sales staff. I mean, it was horrible. I wanted to quit. I wanted to run. It's just we did not take the right steps. But I think that one of the biggest pieces is we didn't have the culture that was to match a one price store. And two, we never really got ground level. And before we made those changes, we should have got with the people first, because if you're trying to change anything, it has to start with your people. Then you can go to the process. If you can't change process, then try to change people. First, you got to change the people, get them to buy in, and then start rolling in the processes, then start rolling in the promotions and getting some wins that way. So that's what I learned from that failure. And it was probably one of the best.
Man, thanks for sharing that. That's encouraging to me as a one price single point of contact dealer that, man, we've had failures along the way, and we've learned from it and are still learning. So excited to talk more about that. The next guy on stage, and I really appreciate you for coming up and being willing to be a part of this. This is Glenn Lundy. If you don't know Glenn, if we're talking about wake up sleepyheads, this guy knows how to wake up. He is the host of Breakfast with Champions and Rise and Grind. And I think this morning, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was number 807, is either 806 or 807 episodes of this morning show. It's absolutely incredible way to wake up. And Drew was talking about dancing, and I love the very first thing we get to do in the morning is get our dancing shoes on with Glenn. So if you don't know Glenn, you're about to get to know him. Glenn, welcome to the stage. There it is. Come on.
Wake up, baby.
What up, guys? What up, man? I appreciate an opportunity to share the stage with you. This is awesome, man. Appreciate you sharing the space and time with me.
Awesome.
I don't drink coffee, man. I don't drink any caffeine. It's crazy, though. I've never drank caffeine. Like, that's never been a thing for me, like, ever. I believe even, like, soda, I drink clear soda or flavored sodas, but I don't drink, like, Coke or Dr. Pepper or any. I'm weird, man. I've just never been a caffeine dude.
Now that works. Could you share with us maybe a failure that you've had in the past that you've learned from, that you've grown from, that's given you the opportunity to be better?
Golly, you mean like this morning or further back in time, man? I'm like, I'm failing my way through everything that I do, you know? I'm one of those guys that just, you know, I'm the let's jump out, you know, jump out of the nest and we'll figure it out on the way down is kind of been my strategy for a while. But I think one of the things that would be a good lesson for everybody is, you know, I used to run the second largest used car franchise dealership in the country. Had an opportunity of being the general manager there, working for an incredible owner. And I decided to leave that retail space when I was at the top of my game, doing really well in automotive, had made a name for myself. My wife was 9 months pregnant. And, you know, we had the house and the white picket fence and all of those things that we hope. And I had really reached the pinnacle of my career. And I made a decision to leave and step out of that. And when I first stepped out of it, one of the things that I was doing is I spent a lot of time, like one of the reasons I left the retail building is I wanted to make sure that my family, you know, my kids were all getting older. I got 8 kids and they were all starting to reach that age with all the different ball games and dance recitals and all these things. And I really wanted to make sure that I had an opportunity to participate in all of those things. And my dealership, you know, condoned that behavior. They wanted us to be family first, but you know how it is. You guys know how it is. When you got the car business in your blood, it's in your blood. And so when I left, that was part of the reason that I left the retail side. And then I immediately went into on the road, traveling, living in hotels, leaving every Tuesday, coming back home on Fridays, doing it all over again, you know, hitting one, two dealerships a week and just chasing the dollars, right? Because I was kind of like panicking, like, okay, I just quit my job. I was making great money. What am I going to do now? And I was saying yes to every opportunity. I did that for about the first 8, 9, 10 months, man. And then I looked and was like, wait a minute, dude, you're doing the same thing and just in a different way. You're still saying yes. You're still sacrificing the time and the space that your family needs right now. Like, you're just doing it different. And I think a lot of times we do that in this business, in the auto industry. I think, like, we'll change maybe what the vehicle looks like, but it's still the same engine that's driving it, right? We'll make a couple modifications on the body style, but it's still the same transmission, you know, that's in the vehicle. And we do that in our dealership. We'll change what it looks like a little bit on the outside, but our mindset of what's possible stays the same on the inside. And so my biggest lesson from that was like, whoa, get really, really clear. Where do you want to go? Why do you want to go there? When do you need to get there? Who do you need to take with you, right? It's the who, what, why, where philosophy, who, what, why, where, and when. And then from there, you can figure out the how. But most dealerships are so focused on how they're going to do things, and they don't understand where they're going. And it ends up just looking different on the surface, but getting the same results in the end. So that's been the biggest lesson for me, man, is don't just change the surface. Dig deep, figure out what you can do to really get where you want to go, and then do the hard things that it takes to make that happen. I hope that...
Yeah, massive help. Asking those questions up front are crucial to success, because if you go into it with just guns a-blazing, it's either going to just burn you out, tire you out, or you're going to get to the end of it and everybody's going to be left in the dust because you didn't bring them along with you. It's so important to change with community, not by yourself. And I think that's a big part of the message that you were just sharing. Just so everyone knows in the room, you may have gotten the notification, just turn hand raising on. We want to bring people up. This is a conversation, not a monologue or a six-person dialogue. So raise your hand, get a part of the conversation. We'll bring you up. If you have questions or comments to add to this change management conversation, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask just a question to get that going, and I'll sit back or whatever we need to do to get this room. But we came from, a lot of us came from this room where we were talking about the vendor dealer relationship. And in that room, it was really interesting. There was a lot about, you know, who do you go after first? Who from the vendor side, how do you get into the dealership? And what the dealers in the room were saying was, well, you got to get to me, but then I got to get all my people on board. And so I'd love to hear from a couple people on the panel when they've experienced or when you've experienced like heading into that change management. How did you begin the process? And Duran, you were so gracious at saying like, hey, we did it wrong the first time. But how do you begin the process of kind of saying, all right, this is what we're going to do. These are the practical steps to bring everyone into the room. And maybe Drew or Duran, it sounds like you, one of you all could take that question, but anyone on the panel, please.
Sure, I'm happy to jump in here because change management is something I'm obsessed with right now. Just finished reading a couple books on it because I think really change management is crucial for our industry. If we want to seize the future, then we need to think about what are the skills that it actually takes to effectively create change in our dealership. And I've said before, I said yesterday in our chat that soft skills have a branding problem. We think of soft skills, we use that word soft, and they don't sound important, but it's so crucial for us to learn these key management skills and leadership skills. It's not a switch that we turn on in our brain and we just say, okay, I'm going to be awesome at change right now. I really believe that it takes time for all of us to learn what does it really take to roll something out in our dealerships, in our organizations. What does it truly take? How do you get the buy-in? How do you roll out a communication plan, an incentive plan? How are you updating your incentives so you're incentivizing the behavior that you want to see? And so I'm a huge believer that all of us who are leaders in the room, if we want to be successful, we need to take the time to actually learn these skills so that we can be effective driving change. And those who do that, they're going to be the ones who really seize the future. When we implement technology, digital retailing is such a great example, and don't think about the change management and process management aspects of that rollout, it just becomes shelfware, right? It's really about how are we updating the way we're operating as a dealership.
Yeah, so I actually feel like I'm a vendor sometimes coming in, and the thing is definitely going to be the culture. You have to, with the buy-in thing, I have found, since for anyone who doesn't know, I help salespeople build their Facebook business pages, and we help create content for them as well as our viewership. And I'm so thankful that our dealer principals and our GMs are so on board with the digital content creation for our dealerships. But the buy-in is not always with the salespeople and the service people who we're trying to put out there in the community so the community can see their face. It takes a few people on the team to consistently keep creating content. This is just in my experience. We have to find the people who actually want to join at first, and then through their success, others will see their success, and then they want to help. We have a lot more salespeople now who are hopping on because they see the end result is already being made. So you need a few pioneers, I think, to help you in your journey, if that makes sense.
Hey, this is Frank, and as usual, Glenn in his intro there, he dropped $1 million line in there, and I think a lot of people did pick it up. But I want to make sure that everybody heard it. And he clearly said, the first step is to get clear about where you want to go. And I think that's a big problem. That's a big challenge that we see a lot, because that clarity from the top, that clarity from the dealer principal's office, the general manager's office, a lot of times it doesn't come. And a lot of times it doesn't come because either they don't believe or they're not 100% in the know, possibly. But it's amazing, in all of my years in automotive, when the dealer or the general manager, when the person who's really, you know, in the captain's seat of the ship, when they make a decision and they firmly believe that a change is going to be good and that it's going to stick, it's good and it sticks unless it's not, meaning that unless whatever that change is, it just didn't work out. There's no problem with getting people on board in the long run. I mean, you're always going to have that storm. You know, Chris Martinez, in his book, Driving Sales, he talks about as soon as you want to take your store to the next level, you're always going to have to go through what he calls the storm, that little bit of revolt and doubt and second guessing and everything. But when the person in the captain's seat is 100% clear about where it is that they want to go, whatever that change is that they want to make, and they're 100% confident that it's going to work and it's going to be best in the long run, man, that's when you see the highest rate of success, or at least that's when I've seen the highest rate of success. So I want to thank Glenn for dropping that $1 million line in there and allowing me to pick it up and expand on it.
The only thing I would definitely build on that, Frank, during my time at Hendrick, I sat in a role that you know, it was always in front of GMs and listening to their pain points from a communication standpoint with vendors, with, you know, their partners in the space. And I think there's a paradigm between dealerships and their value proposition locally from an execution standpoint. Like, I talk a lot about brand promise and what is your dealer's mission statement. You could use so many different buzzwords to define it, but the leaders who can, I think, the GMs at the dealership level, at the local level, who can package that and really follow through and execute against it, aligning that communication, effective communication, is ultimately what delivers it. And I'm a true believer in that. And that cascades, I think, no matter what role you play within this industry.
Yeah, I think the fragility of all of this is a, you know, early on, I can't remember who said it, that there's this fear of failure. And then that fear of the failure and the fragility causes us not to act or communicate. So I think that taking action at some point is necessary. We can dream and we can think up all the change that we want to do, but there's some level of going, here's the first step. This is what I'm going to do first to make this change. And I would love to hear here's my problem with Clubhouse. There's a lot of great theory. There hasn't been a ton of great action. So especially from the dealers in the room, from David or even Jonathan is a trainer and going into dealerships to take that first step toward action. What is that first step toward action? The real practical thing that you've seen brings your team along outside. Like, let's assume that there's some level of culture in your store and you are, there's a whole culture conversation and maybe we'll get into that here in just a minute, but let's assume there's some level of culture that allows you to get to this point. What's that practical first step? And maybe David, if you'd be willing to take that, because I know that change at the level of the volume of stores that you all have, when you are going into change, it's bringing along a lot of people, not just a few managers.
Sure, Kyle. Change was obviously a lot easier when I had one rooftop, and I'm sure a lot of people in the room understand what I'm saying, but I love this room. I loved hearing Glenn talk about clarity. Absolutely love and adore Frank and what he brought to the call. Kyle, you've put together a great lineup for sure. So here's where my head is. I want bandwidth, right? Oftentimes we over-innovate, meaning we got all these great initiatives, but we don't have enough bandwidth at each level to be able to actually execute. So that's the first thing. Do you have, or do I have, or does my company have the bandwidth, or is there too much change going on at that time? So that's my first question. If I check that box, yes, we have the bandwidth, then is, can I be completely sold? I mean, sold, like immovably sold, like this is it. I'm going to hook my boat to that anchor and that is it. I mean, no matter how stormy it gets, which, by the way, any change, here's the way I see change, is it super messy in the beginning. This is Robin Sharma, by the way. I'm stealing it. It's incredibly hard in the middle, but it's absolutely magnificent at the end if you hang in there. So one is the bandwidth. Two is, are you completely immovably sold that that's the direction you want to go because of the clarity you have around the outcome? And then the final piece is the over-communication of the benefits through guided discovery. Like, I can't imagine. I think two things go on is we have the business we run, and then we have the business we think we run. And oftentimes the leaders are so far removed is they have this ideal idea of what their business is actually doing. When you actually roll up your sleeves and get in the trenches, it's not even remotely the same. So those are my thoughts on change, and it's super, super interesting. But if you don't have the bandwidth, if you're not completely clear and sold on what the change is, and then if you don't do guided discovery and over-communicate the benefits, I think you set yourself up for it to be just one of those next great ideas that the GM brought back from NADA
it's going to last for 3 weeks and you'll never hear about it again. So those are my final thoughts. It's good to see everybody on the stage.
David, can you expand for us a little bit more what you mean by guided discovery? Because I think that that's a loaded term that maybe some people in the room might have.
Sure. So it's really hard for me because I want to impose my will and just go in and say, gosh darn it, just have a look at this. Can't you see the benefits? So planting the seeds and watering them and letting people get to their conclusion through guided analogies, through evidence to support the belief, through other people outside of the, through social proof, through friends in the business that are doing it well. I mean, that's sort of the guided discovery versus me coming in with a ballpoint hammer saying, don't you see? Can't you understand? I mean, it's just never going to get any kind of traction until the light bulb comes on, in my opinion, not just for the people that are in the inner circle or the leadership team, but to somebody else's point, the end user, the person that's going to use it and execute on it every day. That's the person I think that we need to have the guided discovery. Last thing I'll say about that, I'll never forget. I was making $250,000 a year, working 30 hours a week as a salesperson in Clearwater, Florida, the best place for a 25-year-old to live. The owner that I loved came in and said, we're going to be a one-price dealer. And I was like, I'm not going to be a one-price dealer. And then the commercials that came out was we were dirty, rotten scoundrels all the way up until we saw the light and found the religion of one price. And I was like, screw you. And I left, right? So I was selling 40 to 60 cars a month. And I was like, that's not going to work for me. Now, had he came to me, and this is me, I'm an ass, right? Had he came to me and said, hey, what do you think? Let's look through this. Look what people are doing. Can you see the value? I'd probably have been like, yeah, I can get behind that. But I think that was a great lesson for me to know that I can't just impose my will and expect everything.
I have a comment here from the vendor side of things. So I'm a vendor, and things that I've learned being a vendor, I think we're all really keen to sell our product to any dealer that's willing to listen. But oftentimes that's not the best approach. So it is a partnership, and us as vendors, we need to do a little bit of homework and pre-qualify these dealerships that we're approaching to see if they're actually going to find benefit and be able to utilize your product or your tool or whatever it is you're selling to its full potential. And it's our job to almost paint that picture clearer. To your point, David, about bandwidth, I think that we can do a better job painting this roadmap to success and say, this isn't a plug and play solution. It is a process driven approach, and it may take some time for everyone to get used to, you know, utilizing the tool to the most of its ability. So I think that there is some onus on the vendor side too, and we can do a little bit better at that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Logan, and being humble with that. I just, if anyone is ready, please, you can unmute your mic in just a second. I'm gonna reset for everybody. We're talking Clubhouse plus NADA 2021. Where we're inviting personal connection to the room that we don't get the opportunity to have as automotive dealers and vendors sitting across the table breaking bread. And this has been so incredible. This is the 5th of 6. We'll have another one this afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern. But we're talking change management right now. We've got incredible panelists and moderators in Frank Lopes, Nathaniel Grecklick, Drew Delaware. I almost called you a different Drew. I know. I apologize. Duran Cage, Glenn Lundy, Jonathan Dawson, and some incredible speakers. You're going to want to follow everyone that's up on the stage, follow people in the room. If you do have comments or questions for anyone in this room, raise your hand. Hit that little raise hand button. We'll bring you up and bring you into the room. This is the beauty of Clubhouse, that we all get to sit across the table and you get to be in the room with some incredible people across our industry pushing it forward, so that as we move forward and innovate together and the contagious nature of the conversations that we're having go into our workplaces, that by the time we get to 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, our industry is a better place to work. People are attracted to it, knocking down the doors to get in, where our kids are desiring to get in our industry. And that in turn allows more customers to seek after relationships with our dealership body. So as we keep going, we're talking change management. I want to allow the moderators in the room to continue that conversation along what it takes to practically move forward with bringing your people along and walking through the process of change management. Jonathan, we haven't heard from you. I'd love to get your take on this. And even if for the people that weren't in the room just before this, maybe walk through some of those practical things that you're doing as you consult dealers.
Yeah, I appreciate this so much. It's a wonderful topic. In fact, I'm editing a video that I shot a while ago on this very subject of how do we create a consistent buy-in when we institute a new change of process or procedure or something that happens. And I'm, of course, looking at it from the psychology angle and asking what is the psychological impact of change and why do people resist it so much? There's a funny kind of quip that says the only human being that really wants to be changed is a wet baby. And as a new father of a little girl, I can tell you she's tugging on a diaper all the time now, basically saying, change me, Papa. And that's really interesting because it's so true that there, once we get past the diaper stage, we don't really want to be changed that much as adults and as people in general. And there's a word that if anybody taking notes could write down, I think it's a critical word when we're talking about change. And it's a word that it sounds like Glenn may have already touched on. I only caught the tail piece of somebody recapping his statements, but it's the word certainty. And I actually believe that certainty is the foundation and fundamental emotional state within an organization in order to institute change. And the challenge with that is that change by its very necessity creates uncertainty because change causes things to be different than what your expectation was, or at least where your past expectations were. So certainty, though, is so critical because when we look at like behavior, if we just take it, say what at the root of behavior is what causes someone to take action. And certainty is the number one factor that causes someone to take any kind of action. The higher the level of emotional and psychological certainty, the more consistent and the more deliberate the action will be. And that is translated across all behavior. So if you're trying to implement a new tool, process, widget, some sort of change, what you have to realize is that the nature of most people is that the moment you change anything is it creates uncertainty. And wherever there's uncertainty, there's a lack of desire to take action. People become resistant to moving. So what we as leaders or influencers, people who have the ability to cause effective change, have to do is we have to play out the movie in advance. Chris Voss, the author of Never Split the Difference, he talks about this and uses the term an accusation audit. And it's what I've been teaching for years as well, which is be proactive, which is was illustrated by the movie 8 Mile. If you guys ever saw the movie 8 Mile with Eminem, you'll remember that the kind of culmination scene is in that rap battle. He basically takes all the things that his opponent in the rap battle would have said against him, and he framed them for the opponent in the rap battle and took all the ammunition away from his opponent in the rap battle. The guy couldn't say anything because Eminem actually already said it about himself. So an accusation audit is an exercise of asking the question, if we were to be accused of something, what would we be accused of? What is it that somebody, if they were going to have an objection, what would be their objection? What would be the thing if someone was resistant to the change? What would they resist? And we as leaders fail to do this so often because we have the ability to dictate and mandate. So we don't talk about how do we communicate better. And so this one exercise, when you said, you know, what's one thing that would help, you know, practically help someone, you know, create change. The first practical thing you need to do is do an accusation audit. Where would we be creating uncertainty? And how do we practically begin to address those things by communication with the people that are going to be impacted by this change? Because there's always unintended consequences. Our government is the best at taking action without asking what are the unintended consequences of this decision. And they impose regulations or laws or things and don't play out the movie at all. And then we all have to suffer the consequences of that, what that looks like when a dictator, the government, institutes a process or procedure or law without thinking through how does this affect people in the real term. So we can all do better at this. And I think that communication brings clarity, and clarity breeds certainty. And the more certainty people have behind a change, the more they'll buy into it. And the more they buy in, the better results you'll get, and therefore it'll be adopted at a higher level. So that would be my advice or encouragement to everybody, is do the accusation audit and focus on how do we create more certainty within the
Jonathan, absolutely fantastic. Once again, million-dollar advice there. And you hit something. Change creates uncertainty, and then uncertainty creates anxiety, and then anxiety creates resistance, right? All of us, everybody in the room, we have all been taught objection handling from day one that we got in the car business. But when we're in a management or leadership role, and we want to inject some type of a change into the organization, you know, David said it before, and he said it perfectly. Most of the time, we want to use, you know, our objection handling is taking a hammer and just trying to smash everything that objection with what we want to go with, instead of us, you know, using foresight, knowing that these objections and whatnot are going to come up, and anticipating them, creating a play for them ahead of time on how to handle them and how to get those objections out of the way and keep everybody on the track of progress. You know, if there's any notes that you haven't written down yet, I think that's a big one. Change creates uncertainty. Uncertainty creates anxiety. And then anxiety creates resistance. If you know that's what's going to come, be prepared for the anxiety that you can calm it, and be prepared for the resistance that you know that storm is going to come, and you know how to handle it before the wind kicks up, like, at all. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
I'd like to jump in on that and kind of dovetail. As a dealer, I find that one of our biggest challenges is to get the leadership team to embrace change. It's not so much the frontline worker, it's the leadership team. And if the dealer embraces change and can convince the leadership team to embrace change, it's easy to get the troops to embrace change. And that's our biggest challenge. Is so I've spent a lot of time trying to convince our leadership team that change is good, because they view it as bad, and that the roadblocks that they think exist are really guideposts, and change can help us get to those guideposts of greatness and become the greatest dealer in our market. And I find that the troops are the easy ones. And so for whatever that's worth, that's kind of my mantra.
Sam, where do you think that resistance from management, what do you think is the root cause of that? Do you think that it's, for example, maybe it's a fear of failure, that they'll be afraid that if they go along with the change and it doesn't work out, that they'll get blamed for it? Like, in your experience, where do you see that resistance actually come?
You know, it really depends on the person. You may have a person who is very comfortable and really doesn't want to put out the extra effort required with the change, or the fear of having to deal with maybe some workers that may not understand the change. And that brings up a good point, that understanding the end result is extremely important before you start to embrace change. But I'm not sure it's any one recipe with any one person that determines, you know, why are people resistant.
You know, I can remember as a desk manager, you know, experiencing that just from a very simple some of you on this call are probably still using the Blue Era Reynolds, or the blue screen for Reynolds, and I was so issued out when they were taking that away from me, right? It's, you know, no one likes change, but I clearly saw that it was easier. The new desking system was easier, and it is very difficult, especially in the car business, to make these changes. But, you know, something that I pretty much live by, and I apologize if you've been in these rooms and this is familiar to you, but I think there's a two-part. I think it's this part, and then I'm going to touch on what David says, that I think is so powerful. And that is, first of all, forget about everything else, but in life, in general, your direction, I heard this is not original, 7 or 8 years ago, and it changed my life. Your direction determines your destination.
We are where we are financially, spiritually. We are with our relationships. We are in our dealerships right now selling the amount of cars because of decisions made months, if not years ago. It is moving. No matter how hard I try, I can go out in my garage, I can put in my sunscreen, I can put in my swim shorts, I can put on my sunglasses, but I go out and I pull onto 75 North, I'm never getting to Florida. First, the leader has to cast a vision on where they want to go and then buy in for and involve his key people and his team members, his leadership on why and make them a part. Very clear example of that. Look at this past year's NFL season. Look what Tom Brady did to the Buccaneers. More importantly, look what the coach of the Cleveland Browns did to the exact same team. Leadership. This is our vision. And then unfortunately, look what happened with the Houston Texans. One of the greatest and best quarterbacks in the NFL is now wanting out of there because of the dysfunction. And then on all of that, it's not leadership alone and casting down the gauntlet. I went to a 20 group. I was a sales manager, part of some of those that the general manager, the owner came in and said, this is the way we're going to do things. It lasts 3 weeks and then it's done. It's all in the delivery of the vision and the direction that you want to take, like David Long. David has one of the most passionate leaders, and I have become a fan very quickly. You've got to undergird the passion for your direction with love for your people and allowing them, because I've seen the love that his people has for him, because there's no ego there. There's confidence, there's not conceit. So I think it's two-pronged. I think number one, you have to first, before you go on any trip, we've got to figure out where we're going. Once we figure out that, you get your key people on, we believe, we jump on board, and then we make sure with humility, we cast the vision in such a way that our people want to go with us.
I want to key in on a little bit of what you said there. We are in the people business. We're not in the car sales business. We're in the people business. The car sales is a result of the people that we get to serve and enhance and grow and give the opportunity to far exceed their own expectations. And if we allow ourselves, and I think Drew said it earlier, if we allow ourselves how to learn better what it looks like to love, serve, guide, direct, bring along, and grow our people, they will run through brick walls for us. And like Sam said, like it's the people that are the troops that are the easiest ones. But the reason probably, I'm guessing, in Sam's stores why they're the easiest ones is because they look at him and see him being willing to grow and dig into them and ask them about their weekend, their family, their everything that's going on in life, so that the culture is driven first by the people, not by the deal or not by the process that you want to change, but that your process is driven by your desire to change people. And that first starts internally, and then that continues to our customer base. We've got 6 minutes left in this hour, and I want to give the moderators an opportunity to just kind of to rapid fire just some thoughts as we leave this room, and then I'll wrap us up. So we'll start with Frank, and just rapid fire, just some of the thoughts that you've had as we've been walking through this room, and then we'll care for everyone's time well and make sure we get everyone to the end of the day. And so
I'm on page 3 of my notes already, so let me just do the stuff that I hit with a highlighter instead of reading everything that I wrote. Glenn shared something beautiful. You get clear about where you want to go without the direction on knowing where it is exactly that you want to go. You're just going to drift and you're going to be lost. David shared from there, is the leader completely in? How important is it for the person who is in charge to be completely in on the idea? Jonathan added that beautiful part, change creates uncertainty, uncertainty creates anxiety. Anxiety creates resistance. Anticipate the resistance because it's going to come. Sam brought up a beautiful point. Why is the management staff resistant to the change? If you can figure that out, you can probably get around a huge obstacle that's in your way of actually making the change happen.
And Tim, I've heard Tim say, he already left the room, but, oh no, he's still here, I'm sorry. I've heard Tim say it a million times before, and the reason he says it is because it's true. Your direction determines your destination. Once again, if you don't know where you're going, you're just gonna drift. All the points tie in together beautifully in the whole point of get 100% clear about where it is that you wanna go as the leader. Where it is that you want to go so that you don't drift, so that a little bit of wind or a storm doesn't blow you off course. I think it was a fantastic room today. Absolutely fantastic. And I was blessed and honored to be a part.
Yeah. Nathaniel.
Well, Frank took all my notes. And the biggest thing that really stuck out to me was the certainty brings anxiety, brings resistance. And then making sure you have that clear goal. I think that's whenever I sit down with any of the salespeople, like the clear goal is to make sure that we're going to build their organic engagement by the content that we create for the people that they sell cars to. We want to, the clear goal is to make sure that they create content that their people want to see. And man, I don't even know how to top what Frank said, because I mean, that's exactly what I wrote down. And that's the only experience for that.
Awesome, Drew.
Well, thanks for this great conversation. It's really enriching to hear everybody's perspectives and all the shares, the wisdom. It really stands out for me that this concept of change is something that we need to be talking about and understanding better. So one of the things that I'm really thinking as we leave this conversation is what is our learning plan for getting better at change? So it's one thing to identify all of the places where change is challenging, where change can be made easier, but how do we build the skills amongst in ourselves, amongst our leaders, in our people who are rising stars? How do we build those skills? Where do we go to learn more about how to be great at change? Because if we want to be effective as an industry, then we certainly are going to need to level up our change management skills, because the change is coming.
Awesome. Durant.
Wow. So Kyle, thank you so much again for having me on. Frank, thank you so much for taking the notes, because I missed a couple things and I could put it back in my phone. Nathaniel, Drew, Jonathan, Glenn, everybody, David that came up here, Tim. I mean, super awesome to be up here with you guys. I learned so much. And I mean, if I had to button it up, the biggest thing that I would take away is, like, you know, organizations don't change, people change. And it seems like the biggest takeaway that I got from the last 60 minutes of hearing from these talented experts up here is how to effectively make that change with the people. You know, so how do you do that? And one thing that was repeated over and over again, if anybody caught this, it's the C word, and it's communication. David had said over communication, and Jonathan had touched on it as well. And that's when, at the very beginning of this call, I talked about my setback when I moved a store from one way of doing business to another. That was probably one of the biggest things outside of the culture was the communication. So this was really great. It's beneficial. It's beneficial to me now, and I hope it helped everybody that's in the audience. And thank you again for having me. That was
so glad to have you.
All right, man. I'm going to wrap it up with this. I'm going to give you guys a quote from Warren Buffett. This is, I think, one of the biggest issues with our industry. So Warren Buffett says, "You can't make a baby in a month by getting 9 different women pregnant. Some things just take time." And I think in our industry, we all live and work and breathe and die by this 30-day window. We count everything by the month. How many cars we sold for the month, we pay by the month, we change our manufacturer's incentives by the month. Everything's by the month. And so when we go to institute change, we try to make it all happen in a month. And when it doesn't, it's like, he's not up here anymore, but it's like the other gentleman said, we say we're gonna do something a certain way, and then 3 weeks later, it's gone, right? change takes time. You have to develop it. You have to be consistent with it. You have to believe in it and stand strong in it. Like David said earlier, you have to be passionate about it. You have to cast that vision and continue to cast it every day, every day, every day, for weeks and months and sometimes years. But if you stay with it over time, you can institute change through clear communication, a clear path of where you're trying to go. But the biggest mistake most dealers make is they don't give themselves the time to really create.
Yeah, that's a huge deal. We are so driven by 30 days, and this is going to take commitment for the long haul to continue this element of change in our industry.
Well, so I really appreciate so much this conversation. It's so valuable because ultimately, fundamentally, growth requires change, and yet change is one of the most intellectually understood concepts and yet one of the most emotionally resisted. And so I think whenever implementing change, if we can remember that, you know, when trying to bring about change, we need to communicate and over-communicate a few of the reasons or benefits. So the first thing is we need to do it intellectually. We need to intellectually help them understand what is changing. We need to help them understand emotionally, why is it changing? That translates naturally to the next one, which is beneficially. What is the end benefit to them? What is the reason why the change is good for them? And then practically, what are the specific changes we're going to be implementing and what is their role in that? And so if we can make sure that we do the intellect of what and the emotion of why and the benefit that they're going to be experiencing, and then we get into the practical of, again, how it's going to look, we get a higher level buy-in. I mentioned earlier about the importance of anticipating the consequences and the unintended consequences of the change, doing that accusation audit. That's so critical and important as well. So I just want to stress that to everybody. And I just want to encourage along the lines of what Glenn said. You know, at one point, Jesus and his disciples are together when somebody comes and brings a sick child and says, hey, can you help me with my sick child? I brought him to your disciples and they could do nothing for it. You know, can you help me? And Jesus' response is, you know, you know, wicked and perverse generation, you know, how much longer will I be with you and how much longer will I suffer you? And he later then turns to his disciples and basically accuses the disciples of having too little faith. And I think it's important that we realize, you know, Jesus' disciples followed him. They watched him do all of these things. And yet he still turned to them and basically, you know, kind of, you know, frustratedly said, how much longer do I have to still tell you this stuff? Like, you still don't get it. And so the grace that we as leadership must have mixed with our standards is so critically important when we're leading people, because we are leading broken people, and broken people are hard to change. So the human factor is so critical. We can talk about our process, and it can be the absolute best process. It can be the best website, it can be the best widget that we can find. It can be the best tool we can find, best technology we find. But behind the scenes, they're human beings, and these human beings are essentially fragile. You know, we all are just one or two or three life altering consequences, choices, or decisions away from having a completely different life. And in some cases, it could be painful for some people. So we be gracious towards human beings, because ultimately, fundamentally, that's who Jesus came and died for. Didn't die for business, didn't die for profit, didn't die for process, died for people. So we serve people through our processes, hold the people accountable is an act of compassion. We remember that as well. It's a delicate subject, but it's worth talking about and debating. And these conversations are so meaningful, Kyle. And thanks for creating a room like this.
Jonathan, man, thank you so much for being faithful to share what you just shared. That was huge, and I appreciate you walking in faith there. And for every panelist and speaker that's come up today, and everyone in the audience that's stuck in and said, this is an important thing. This is something we need to be talking in our industry. I'm literally getting goosebumps right now because of what we're able to and willing to talk about right now. And it's not just four or five people in a room. It's close to 100. And here was my encouragement yesterday, and I'm going to encourage every single person in the room today. If you're in this room, you are a leader. You have the capacity to lead not just yourself. You're the most influential person. in your life. You are the most influential person in your life. So you get the opportunity every single day to lead yourself. But then you have the opportunity with a small subset of people, whether it be 5, 7, or 10, you have the opportunity to have a massive influence on those people. And that's why I created this thing called Contagious Podcast, because I think that what we believe and what we lead out in our personal life can be contagious with the people around us. Think about this. If the 100 or so, just less people in this room get up and say, I'm going to lead out an innovation in the automotive industry or whatever industry you're in, if you're in this room, and say, I'm going to take that action, and you go change and work with and communicate with and bring along 5, 7, 10 people in your circle. And then they get so fired up by the way that you're leading out in that. And then that happens. I mean, we're talking 2 to 3 days. We're going from 89 people in a room to hundreds of people going, this is important, innovation is important, and change is important in our industry, so that we can see an industry that's an incredible industry already, that more people want to come into and work for and knock down the doors to be a part of, and that customers are attracted to. That's contagious. That's exciting. And I'm excited about what we get the opportunity to do through these crazy things called Clubhouse Rooms, and what we're going to do as an industry today because of the conversations that we're having launching off of NADA. Again, my name is Kyle Mounsier. I'm the host of Contagious Podcast and Marketing and Business Development Director at Nelson Auto Group. This will be available via recording on Contagious Podcast by tomorrow. If you have friends or anyone that wants to hear this, or you want to listen back and take notes because there were a ton of notes to be had, I couldn't type fast enough myself, please do that. Follow each of these people that are on the stage and follow people around you so that we can get in more rooms and have more conversations over the coming weeks, months, and years to further our industry and to further these conversations. Y'all have been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you enjoyed that. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and the innovation and the insights that happened on Clubhouse. As always, please like, share, comment. Give this to those in your workplaces or friends or family that may be encouraged by it. And what we need from you is for you to be a part of this conversation, to have this conversation with more people and not less. We need more voices and not less in our industry pushing forward toward innovation, and that includes you. So as you go forward, as you listen to this, as you think about this, make sure you don't have just internal dialogue. Have conversations with more people so that we can provide an innovative atmosphere where more people want to become a part of it and work in the industry as well as do business with us. Thanks for listening to Contagious Podcast.